Follow me down this deep, dark hole.
Welcome to New Horror Express, your fortnightly podcast chatting to the best indie talent the horror genre has to offer. I'm your host, Scott Murphy, and before I get into this episode, I just want to say once again to all who's listening that I hope you're all staying safe and well in home, and you've not done anything silly like inject yourself with disinfectant or anything like that. Don't worry now, I'm not going to get all political. But seriously, that's one of the maddest things I've ever heard in a press conference. Moving aside, today you join us for our 50th episode, which is really pretty cool, as I had no idea when I first started out that the podcast was going to last this long. And it's still going strong, and we have a whole bunch of interviews ready to come your way very, very soon as well. So we'll be sticking around for a whiles to come yet. Plus, we actually have an exciting announcement to make soon about a joint project that we have become a part of, but we cannot say anything further on that at this minute. But look out for that announcement. Moving on to today's guest. Today we have Evan Whitmer, aka Odd Fiction. He is a horror writer, and we have him on to talk about his short story collection, Pages from the Pizza Crows. Over the course of the interview, we talked to Evan about his transition from children's fiction to horror, how he first got into horror, and why he prefers using the Odd Fiction moniker instead of putting himself front and center. Plus, Evan tells us about his upcoming first novel and the work he's doing on the next collection of Pages from the Pizza Crows, and a whole lot more besides. There's plenty of great chat in this interview. But before we get to that, I just want to give you a quick reminder. The best way you can support New Horror Express is to rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. But now on to the interview with Evan. Hi, Evan. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Scott. How are you?
I'm well. How are you going?
Yeah, very well.
Okay, cool. So we've got you on the show to talk about your stories, your short stories, and you've recently, at the end of last year, put out your first collection. Called The Pages from the Pizza Crows. Before we get into giving a quick synopsis of what can be found in those pages, where'd that title come from? That's an interesting title.
Yeah, so it kind of has a cool little origin story. So back in the day, before I started writing horror, I was trying to write children's books. I had this concept for something kind of whimsical about a crow brings all these poems to a kid. Later on, I kind of ditched the children's books. I just got sick of it. I wanted to move on to horror. So here I am writing about 10 short stories. And I'm like, you know, you really need a framing device if you're going to try and sell these to people. And so I'm like going through my old files, and I see this old concept for a crow delivering these poems. And I'm like, I could rework this. And I kind of like it because it kind of contrasts. The stories are really dark, but the framing device is kind of more cheery and light beat and kind of lightweight.
And for the listeners at home, can you give us a kind of, I know it's 10 separate stories, but like a kind of broad overview of what people can expect from the collection?
Like, yeah, absolutely.
Brief synopsis.
Yeah, so basically the framing device is that a crow starts eating my breakfast in the morning. I decide to befriend it, and I start feeding it pizza. And as a reward, the crow brings me gifts in the form of pages, and I assemble these pages into the short stories in this collection. All the short stories are surrealist fantasy, with a mix of horror in, especially near the end. I love really dark endings. And some of the common themes are that I love to write about animals, things like unicorns, bears. There's also a lot of pocket dimensions. I like to put people in these kind of messed up scenarios where they're stuck in a different world for a bit. But these common themes are kind of trickle throughout the book. And I think it's really good for like a mature audience.
And you were saying that at first you were starting out with children's fiction, and then you moved into to horror fiction. What made you make that switch?
Well, I guess I wrote a full children's book with illustrations called The Puglet. And after all that work and effort, I was like just walking to the bookstore one day and I see a children's book with the exact same title. And I was just kind of frustrated because I'm like, man, it's already been done. And so I guess in the end, I felt like I was only doing the children's book thing for money. And that's not a really good reason to do anything. So I really wanted to put more challenge to myself. And horror is something I actually like and I actually enjoy reading. So, I mean, yeah, it just kind of changed in morality. Less about money, more about interest.
And have you always been interested in reading horror? What's the kind of earliest horror memories you have of getting into horror fiction?
I was not a Goosebumps guy. I remember this one book called Night of the Bat. It kind of eludes me as to who wrote it, but it just was taking place at these, it's like these young adventurers go into the middle of the rainforest for like a school trip, and just this massive bat starts attacking them. I just thought that was the coolest thing. And this author came out with a bunch of other books with very scary animals, everything from rats attacking. And it really got me into it.
Rats attack. Was that James Herbert then? No?
Oh, it might be. No, I do have a computer right here in front of me. let me take a look here. Oh, there it is. It's L. Ganser. No, Paul Zindel.
Paul Zindel. Okay. Yeah. It's not one I know, but maybe the listeners at home know. Paul Zindel. Fair enough. Okay. Okay. And then from then, you started digging into other horrors?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I love Lovecraft. Pretty big fan. Got a D&D game going on right now where we're all playing through a Lovecraftian scenario. It's been a big interest in my life.
Yeah, it seems that when you were talking about your love of grim endings, I was thinking about Lovecraft, and maybe possibly because I was thinking about Lovecraft as well, because I recently interviewed a guy who wrote a Lovecraft children's book, and also there seems to be a lot of kind of Lovecraft films coming out, or Lovecraft-inspired films like Mandy, Color Out of Space.
Yeah, that's got, what's his name in it, doesn't it?
Nicolas Cage?
Yeah. Been meaning to watch that one.
So does your love of grim endings or you know, not happy, clappy endings, is that part of what where that came from, the kind of Lovecraftian thing?
Yeah, absolutely. I also just kind of, I don't know, I try to think about what actually interests me. And, you know, if I was watching one of these short stories played out on the television, what would excite me? And to be honest, the grimmer an ending when it comes to horror, kind of the better. I hate it when a horror movie kind of fizzles out and everything gets solved and they find out who's been doing all the murders. I kind of like more like Black Christmas, where everything ends kind of ambiguous and nobody really wins. It's just how I'd like to watch it, so that's how I write it.
And so you just write with your impulses kind of in mind, of just being like following your own muse, and you're not scared of like, oh man, a mainstream audience might not like, maybe I'll write a little bit of a happier ending, or maybe I'll make it a bit less grim, or any of those considerations when you're writing? You just focus on where you're going with the story?
Oh, absolutely. I try to fit what's best for the characters. I mean, sometimes I'll really like a character enough to give them a good ending, but it's mainly bad endings.
And when you were going through your short stories, was it difficult to pick the final 10 to put in pages from the Pizza Crow, or did that come together quite easily?
Oh, that came together quite easily. I mean, I pretty much only had 10 stories, but there are 10 that I kind of have been working on. What I do is I usually put them out on my website for free at first. And then once the I got a mass 10, I take them down from the website, put up 10 new ones, and then the old ones go into my short story collection that I'm selling. So it kind of gives me time to kind of hear from any of my readers on my website, whether they liked them or not. And with those 10, I definitely got a positive response. So I was really, really excited to kind of try and get more readers through publishing them traditionally.
And was it, did you self-publish? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And did you find that difficult at all in the self-publishing process?
Funny story. At the time, I was just looking for something to distract me. I had just gotten out of a huge breakup, and basically I just needed something to keep my mind off it. So I knew self-publishing was a lot of work, but that's what I was looking for, something that could really just take up all my time. And so far, I actually think that it's definitely not easy, but it's been a lot more successful than I thought. I mean, I've been able to sell, I think, about 50 on my own, and that's been pretty good. Along with some public readings that I set up, it's been really well. So I really actually would recommend self-publishing to anyone who wants to give it a shot. I think it's totally worth it, and don't mind the naysayers.
So did you dive straight into self-publishing? Did you not try and attract a publisher first? Did you just decide, no, I'm just going to put this out?
Yeah, I decided to just put it out. That hasn't been the case with all my stories. Like, I've written novels in the past that I'm not going to self-publish, and I'm going to wait until I find a real publisher for that. But with this being a short story collection, the thing is, a lot of publishers and small publishers and agents all make it clear on their no-fly list is usually short story collections. Apparently, they're not exactly the most sellable books because you can't really create a series out of them, which is what a lot of publishers like to do. So I figured with my chances of it getting picked up pretty low and my interest in trying self-publishing pretty high, let's give this a shot, is what I thought.
Have you tried as well, like, in terms of, is this entirely, like, your first collection? Have you been in other anthologies? Have you put towards other, like, horror anthologies or anything like that?
Well, my only two other kind of claims to fame are both kind of centered around here in the State College, Pennsylvania area. I got a sci-fi short story in Penn State's sci-fi publication called Jump Point. And the other one was actually a children's poem I got put in this project called the Telepoem Booth, where it's like a big telephone booth where you dial in a number and it pumps out a poem for you via like an audio clip. So those are my other two. Besides that, no, I haven't been in too many collections. I really just kind of like to publish on my own website. I just feel like I have more control.
So your website is oddfiction.com. I'm guessing, it was literally just, this is the kind of fiction I write. I'm gonna title it that.
yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of self-explanatory, I guess. I mean, yeah, it's all very weird. It's all very odd. I want people to know what they're getting into. And you know, I also kind of like really, I dig like weird fiction in general, like the genre weird fiction, or some people call it new weird. And it's kind of showing that that's kind of what it's all about.
So do you draw any inspiration from the kind of writers that are kind of tagged under new weird, like Jeff Vandermeer or China Mievel, or, you know, anything like that?
William Hope Hodgson, M.R. James, those are two. more modern. Basically, the writer of the Annihilation series. I'm forgetting his name.
That's Jeff Vandermeer, I believe.
Oh, okay. Okay, I gotcha. Yeah, he's actually from, oddly enough, same area as me, State College. So, yeah, that's pretty cool.
Have you ever met or anything else?
I wish. I've been part of a lot of writing clubs around here, but I don't think any have been successful to get him to come back. I mean, with Hollywood movies coming out now, I think he's a pretty big name. He's probably too busy.
So going back to your website, what made you decide, I'm going to make a website for my short stories? And when did you start the website?
So it was actually a gift from the same ex that brought about the depressive episode. But it was a Christmas gift. She knew I liked to write, and she set up this whole website for me, paid for a year of subscription. And I kind of wanted to take advantage of that. I mean, it's a really cool idea. A lot of writers have blogs. But honestly, I don't like to write about myself at all. So instead of a blog, I decided to fill it up with what I really want people to read, which are my short stories. And I really don't mind them being free, because overall, the writing world is extremely saturated. And so to have that price point of zero, I think it's a really good way of getting new readers to give me a shot and to really try it out. I also think that a lot of people are sometimes hesitant to start reading again, you know, with all this other media, movies, music, video games. It's all got excellent stories to them. Why go back to reading? And I think that having kind of a zero price point also attracts them too to, you know, give reading a shot again, essentially.
I suppose also in terms of like what you're talking about there, about kind of the overflow of media and modern attention spans, you know, the short stories are perfect for that as well, as a digestible medium.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, yeah. So you're just going to continue that process of putting the short stories out there and then taking them down. And then, you know, obviously this is Page from the Pizza Coast, Odd Fiction, book one. I take it that you're planning many more books based on the stories you've put up on the website.
Oh, absolutely. I already got the framing device for the second one planned out. So it's going to be interesting. It's essentially each of the short stories is going to be written by a cannibal. I was kind of interested in these short story collections that were collected from prisoners. And I thought, that'd be interesting. But what if I just made it up? So instead, before each short story, it's going to talk about the fake author that wrote it. And each one is going to be a known cannibal.
Excellent. Have you picked real life notable real life cannibals from history, or are you making the cannibals up yourself as well?
They're inspired by real ones, but they are completely made up myself. I've even gone back and read a little bit about some Greek mythology about cannibals, so there's a couple references to them too.
All right, fair enough. Do you tend to do much research for your stories, or like
tons, absolutely tons. I especially try to get the settings right. Whenever I start thinking about a story, the first thing I think about is the place to do it. And I immediately start to just indulge in, you know, what kind of people live in the area. What is the city built like? What is the housing like? I think the best way to make a story seem real is to really base it off a real place and to get in the mindset of that city, essentially. So I do a lot of research into both setting and I guess a lot of mythological research too. I love to add little tidbits from other religions and mythologies into my writing. I don't know. I guess allusions are just kind of cool.
So have you, I was wondering that as well, because like, I was on your website and I've read, you know, a few of the stories on the website, and you do seem to create quite a good sense of place, a grounded sense of place. One of the ones on your website, a vacancy in Staffordshire, and it's obviously set in England. And I just so have you just kind of research on the location, or have you been to England? Or
I wish I'd been to England, but no, it's just all online research. It actually, that one in particular started because the Black Eyed Kids, the myth that it's based off of. There was a bunch of news articles back in the day where these Black Eyed Kids are being spotted in Staffordshire in real life. Now, whether they're real or not, you know, that's anyone's guess. But I took it to, you know, let's play around the idea that they were real and that they're out there, you know.
And you certainly come up with some interesting concepts. I particularly liked the concept of Dragon's Jail. One of the stories on your website, just this thought that dragons were viewed as intellectual enough that they could be on the same par as humans, and that there's a system that has been built to a justice system to be to separately deal with dragons. I thought that was a really quite a neat concept.
Thank you very much.
So how fully formed do your stories come in your head? Do you just think of like something like that, like Dragon's Jail, where it's like maybe you think of that concept and then you build a story around it, or do the stories come through more fully formed than that?
No, you got it right the first time. Definitely the concept comes to mind. Usually sometimes I'll literally just come up with the title. I'll just be like, oh, that sounds cool. And then the rest of it, it'll be kind of like a challenge, like a prompt. Like, okay, so you want to write a story called Dragon Jail. What would a story called Dragon Jail be about? And so the idea of the title actually usually comes to me first before a lot of these. Yeah.
And in terms of like, I know that some writers, you know, it's a very slow process. Some writers is a very fast process, as the story just flows out of them. Like, how's your writing process? Is it difficult? Is it sentence by sentence, like a struggle? Or is it just like, it comes to you, you get one, you know, you just sit and you write and you write and you write, and that's the story?
Yeah, once I start writing, it's pretty hard to stop. I kind of have a routine where on a Saturday morning, I'll usually just make a whole pot of coffee, try to get up really early. I don't know why, but I write better early in the morning than late at night, which is really contrary to what a lot of writers say. But basically, I get up, I drink a whole pot of coffee, and I just start writing like crazy. And yeah, I could probably get a whole short story done in a single day. But usually I have to go back and do edits. So although I'll get the whole structure down, I'll make sure that all the scenes are kind of written. Sometimes they're just one sentence brief summary of each scene, but I'll try to get it all planned out almost like a storyboard. And then later on, maybe over the next 2 or 3 days, I can fill in the blanks on where I left out details. And I'd say the whole process takes about a week.
And in terms of like, is it just things that come into your mind, or where do you draw your inspirations from?
Drawings and music a lot. Oftentimes I'll just be listening to a song and I'll try to interpret the lyrics in a really interesting way. And it kind of leads me to kind of create these prompts in my head where I try to fill in the blanks of what that could mean. Also, a lot of drawings and imagery. I like to just kind of go on something as simple as Google Images, just look up an artist, or I follow a lot of different pages on Facebook full of art, and I just get inspired by the drawings. I mean, it's just, I'd say that just other media, almost outside of books themselves, actually inspire me a lot. I also like old 80s horror movies. Sometimes they give me ideas. It's interesting what can really spark my imagination.
So other horror writers don't particularly influence you in a heavy way?
Well, I can't say exactly that, because like I said, a lot of the, for example, a lot of 80s horror is from pretty good writers. I mean, you got a lot of Stephen King movies like Misery. Let's see, you got, what's his name?
Clive Barker.
Yeah, Clive Barker. Pretty big fan. I think I've seen every single film by Clive Barker. I'm trying to think who else, but yeah, those are some pretty major ones. So I'd definitely say some horror writers have had a huge influence on me.
And what particular type of 80s horror are you into? I mean, you were talking about not liking things kind of wrapping up neatly, so I can't can't imagine you being a massive fan of slasher movies in particular, but what kind of movies are you particularly into?
Well, actually, I mean, there's a particular slasher movie that I just saw that I'd say ended exactly how I like it. It's called Black Christmas. And this one's essentially, it ends with not even telling you who the slasher is. The whole movie, the murderer is an enigma, and they leave it that way. And I freaking love that idea.
Yeah. Black Christmas is something of an outlier because Black Christmas came out before slasher was a genre, really. Like Black Christmas, yeah, it was like 1973 or 1974, so even before Halloween. So, yeah, none of the rules existed because it wasn't a thing. It just wasn't a thing yet. Kind of basically the slasher genre rules were kind of built by Halloween, and then everybody kind of copied that in the 80s. But so maybe that's why, you know, it is quite different.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I guess I do still like a lot of the, there's still a lot of slashers that I do like though. I mean, I know that sometimes usually one person gets away, the final girl, but, I don't know. Sometimes it's still heavily implied that, the villain never dies, so that's still a pretty grim ending. You know, your monster isn't truly dead.
I mean, I think that's partly because there's always a sequel. There's doing always a sequel.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
You know, it was just based on our previous conversation about the Lovecraft thing. Do you like, even though they're not particularly faithful adaptations, are you a fan of the Stuart Gordon Lovecraft films like Reanimator and From Beyond?
I think Reanimator is hilarious. I don't know if it's exactly scary, but I definitely got a chuckle out of Reanimator. I've been meaning to watch the sequels. I heard they're pretty good too.
Pretty decent.
Yeah, I haven't seen the other one you mentioned actually.
From Beyond. It is also, if you've not seen From Beyond, I would recommend it.
Really? When did that come out?
In the 80s, sometime. I can't, off the top of my head, came out after Reanimator. And Reanimator was 85, so I'm going to guess something like 87, 88, something like that.
Interesting. I definitely am going to check that out.
Yeah. Yeah, those films are pretty... pretty fun. Yeah. I was also wondering, when you were talking about you get inspiration from music, is there particular genres of music that inspire you more?
Yeah, for sure. I would say electronica a lot. Like, I'm really into really slow, methodic electronica. It just kind of sets the mood. Like, I start to think that I'm almost in a horror movie. Like, what kind of scene would go to this kind of music? What kind of what kind of man would be walking around to say a song by Blythe Field, something like that. I just really like moody, dark music. So it just always fits my imagination for these kind of moody, dark stories.
And I take it as it's a similar with the art and the drawings. It's I think it's kind of gothic art or what's...
Yeah, I would say gothic artwork. I guess I don't particularly know the name of the artists in general. Usually they kind of just, actually I'm trying to think, there was one in particular that's pretty famous. It's weird. A lot of these, artists often end up becoming like memes themselves. I remember there was this one guy who essentially draws these monstrous versions of, popular cartoon characters. And, I don't know. I mean, that alone just kind of like gets my imagination going. When you see like a 50-foot tall Garfield, like about to like attack a little John, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some artists that I can imagine inspiring horror, particularly things like Geiger, you know, things like that.
Yeah, the alien movies. Yeah.
Also, I was looking on the Amazon page for the page from Pizza Crows, and in your bio, it says you were a SoundCloud rapper. Is that a joke, or was that an actual thing?
Yeah, that is true. Back in college, I think before I even started writing, I was writing raps. So yeah, that still exists. And if anyone's curious, it's called Witness Raps. I can't attest to them being good, but I really think they're funny. So yeah, I'd say that I'm not too ashamed of them. That's why I left them up over all these years. Nothing too bad, nothing too cringy, just kind of hilarious.
Also, looking at your tales, obviously there's a lot of mythology in them. There's a lot of mythological beasts, that kind of thing. Is that a kind of lifelong passion of just into mythology?
Yeah, absolutely. I've loved Greek mythology ever since I was a little kid. I mean, everything comes down to our childhood interests. And I mean, I think my favorite movie as a kid was probably Hercules from Disney. But I think even since then, it's just, I freaking love monsters. And I love Greek mythology monsters. They always have such interesting rules to how you have to defeat them.
Well, particularly, what drew you to that stuff? What was like monsters? This is what I'm interested in, passionate in.
I guess it's just I don't know. I think it really is just the rules that every monster kind of has a clever tactic to beat it. And I like that it's, you have to kind of outsmart them. You can't always just beat them to death with your muscles. You got to use your brain. You got to like think it through. It's almost like solving a puzzle, only if you lose the puzzle, the monster kills you. So, I mean, that's I think why I like them. They're brainier than people want to admit.
At what point did you take these interests? You know, obviously, you've grown an interest in horror. You like mythology, mythological beasts. At what point did you be like, I want to write about this stuff. I want to be a writer. Was that something you decided as like a kid, or have you written? How long have you written for?
Honestly, I did not have the attention span to write as a kid. This really only started about maybe like 3 years ago. Essentially, it was therapeutic. I was having symptoms of bipolar, and one of the things that kind of bothered me were these intrusive thoughts. And essentially, these thoughts would just repeat in my head, and the only way I could get them to essentially calm down was by distracting myself. And the one thing that I found distracted me the most was to kind of get into my own imagination, which I could easily access through writing. So it kind of started with just one or two, and then it snowballed into me writing essentially 10 short stories. And I have a novel too, but it's not been released. But I spent a lot of time on those. And ever since I started, I've gotten a lot more mentally healthy. And I've continued to practice writing as just a means of, I mean, I honestly just find it fun, but the therapeutic effect I think is still there for sure.
So up until that point, up until you started writing, had you not considered being a writer? What was your life path before then?
Before then, I think it was actually the music path. I mean, I know it sounds silly that I wanted to be a rapper, but I think a little piece of me thought that a lot of people found what I was writing. The raps that I wrote were pretty funny. So I thought, you know, maybe either comedy or music. But I guess as I got older and just kind of matured out of that phase, I was like, you know, I could do something more serious than just comedy. I mean, I think I had to kind of get into the attitude that if you put enough work in, you can make something more serious. A comedy is good, but I find comedy to be kind of a little easy.
But there are similarities in terms of comedy and horror. In terms of they can make things accessible. You can make kind of broader social points and, you know, sneak them into a comedy or horror and make them kind of accessible to people. And also, you know, kind of more in terms of movies, but, you know, kind of punchlines and jump scares can work in a similar way.
Right, right. It's all about timing. Yeah.
So, yeah, that, right. So that hadn't crossed your mind of being a writer before then?
No, it was all about the music at that point.
And did the music have, obviously your stories have a surrealistic bent, did your music have any sort of, like, the writing in your music, did that also have a kind of surreal bent?
Absolutely. I mean, the whole character that I made, like, the person doing the raps wasn't even me. I made up this whole other person in order to do the raps, and he was very interesting. He's Witness Raps is the name of the character, and essentially he is almost like a very self-aware beta male who's trying to pump almost femininity into rapping. So it's really interesting. So I think there was definitely a surrealist edge to it, especially with the wordplay. I definitely tried to make some obscure references that, you know, I wanted people to Google them. I wanted people to try to be like, wow, that's really weird that he would reference this.
That's interesting. It was a character. I was wondering, I'm going to guess that you don't necessarily like being front and center. You know, the rapper was a character. It's doesn't pop up straight away that, you know, it's Evan Whitmer on the website. You know, it's Odd Fiction. You would have to click into the about, you know, page, and also on the book as well. It doesn't have your name emblazoned on it either. Do you like that? Do you like that kind of anonymity of just being like printing out as like, ah, this is Odd Fiction?
Yeah, I want to be the last thing that they consider. I mean, as my name grows, it'll become something that's necessary to get people to read my books. But at this point, I mean, no one knows what Evan Whitmer even is. So what I want people to consider, though, is, you know, just the books themselves. I mean, I want to sell things not based on my name, but based on the actual concepts I come up with. Most of my still short stories can be summed up in a really interesting pitch. You know, this one's about a murderous unicorn. Boom, right there. You know, I mean, that's my selling point. Not Evan Whitmer exactly, but I leave little tidbits out there because I kind of like it as a kind of an Easter egg. If you really want to look into who I am, you could find it. I mean, you could even find my old music, but it just takes a little bit of work. And I think that's kind of fun. It adds a little layer of mystery to who's actually writing all this crazy stuff.
And in terms of the collection, do you have some favorite stories? Is there any particular ones out of the 10 that you're like, yep, these ones are the ones that are really close to my heart?
Yeah, absolutely. I think definitely Bedfellows is probably my favorite. I love the concept. It's my favorite ending. I really like how it ends. It's the bleakest I've ever gone. And I also really like, this one's actually more lighthearted. It's called, Captured by Animals. That's right. That one's about a bear that becomes sentient after eating hallucinogens out of a frat's trash can.
That sounds like an interesting concept.
Yeah. Yeah. It's seriously one of my favorites. It's the first time I actually put a little bit of romance into one of my stories, and you know, it's my version of romance, so it's a little odd.
A little bit twisted, is it?
Yeah, a little twisted.
You were saying about Bedfellows that it's the bleakest ending possibly you've ever done. Is that something you think about in terms of just like how far I'm going to push this? Is there any part of your brain that there's like a one-upmanship of like, that story is probably the bleakest ending I've ever done. I'm going to do even bleaker this time.
Absolutely. I really want to challenge myself. I mean, to be honest, this is my first short story collection. Do I think it's pretty good? Yeah, I think it's pretty good. But do I think that the next batch will be even better? Absolutely. And that means that the next batch will be bleaker. It'll be better written. Personally, I really want to work better on characterization. I feel like I've kind of already told you that I'm more of a concept guy. Mm-hmm. I start with the concept, not the character. I think that's something I could definitely work on. So, yeah, I'm always trying to one-up myself, for sure. I think there's a lot of room for improvement.
So that's one of the areas that you think you can improve, that you want to have more fully drawn, well-rounded characters. I know it keeps coming up that Lovecraft, but, you know, unlike Lovecraft, who really does not give a fuck about his human characters.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that it's, I mean, it's plagued horror forever, hasn't it? I mean, a lot of times, like, these are just props in order to kill. I mean, that's kind of how characters are in horror movies. But I think some of the best horror movies, you really care about that character, and you really don't want them to die. And honestly, I don't think I do as good enough a job of that. And it's something that I want to experiment with, at least. I want to really create somebody that people can relate to. It's just tough because short stories are short. So it's like you don't have that much space to really draw out somebody's origin story.
Yeah, absolutely. There's obviously a much more scope in a movie or a novel to kind of really dig into the psyche of a character. I suppose in a short story, that must be quite a complicated process.
Right, absolutely.
Talking about novels, you mentioned you have your own novel. You mentioned that earlier, and you're possibly looking for a publisher for it. Can you tell us anything about that novel?
Sure. Yeah. So it's about the Grim Reaper. I reimagine him. Essentially, his job is to, in this universe, the Grim Reaper hunts down immortals. Essentially, God creates him in order to... essentially, immortals have lived too long, and they're starting to pollute our planet. Instead of him leading souls off to the underworld, this is more of like an action adventure where the Grim Reaper is an assassin. And a lot of the immortals are taken from mythology. I've already told you I love mythology. Everything from Peter Pan to the Wandering Jew to all these different types of immortals from history show up in this book, and he hunts them down.
That sounds pretty cool. I was just also thinking, have you ever read any comic books like the Sandman or anything like that? I was just, you know,
I've read some Batman, obviously the big ones, Killing Joke, Year One. But outside of that, I think the only other comic series I've read was Chew, which is about a psychic who eats food and can see where the food came from. But I know Sandman, and I've actually really wanted to get into Sandman. It definitely does sound, my concept definitely has some similarities to Sandman, I realize. So I don't know.
It's definitely not the same, but I definitely, from the sounds of the concept and the novel, I think you would appreciate the work of Neil Gaiman, particularly on Sandman.
Absolutely.
But yes, we've come to talk about your work, and not just for me to give you movie and comic book recommendations.
I appreciate them. I really do.
So is that completed then? Is that just ready to like push to publishers? Is that?
Yeah, it is. It's ready to push to publishers. I just waiting for the right one. I was kind of hoping that maybe with this short story collection out, I can kind of prove my value. And then maybe I can add that into my cover letter. Say, hey, this last one did pretty good. Maybe you should consider this next one.
Can you tell us the title of the novel?
Yeah, it's called Long Stories.
And in terms of your other collection, the second collection, the second odd fiction book two, the one with the cannibals, all the cannibals, when can we expect that?
December 2020.
Oh, okay. So is that the plan then? Last year it came out in December. Is that the plan to kind of put out one a year?
Yeah, I think that seems fair. I mean, I don't know exactly. I've never really tried to time myself for how fast I can pump these out. But I think having till December seems like a fair challenge.
And are you just basically concentrating on those two things of the second collection and pushing the novel, or are you still developing other stories as well?
I always have a list of books that I want to write once I get the time to do them. I have concepts for a couple other large novels instead of just short stories. It's kind of it's an interesting choice when I get a concept, whether I want to flesh it out into a short story versus a novel. So obviously the short stories kind of take precedent because they're easier to get done faster. Yeah, I do have a list of concepts I'm saving for full novels. I'm excited to kind of get work on those. I just need to find the time.
You were saying earlier with things like Dragon Jail, you come up with a title, you're like, that's a cool title. What's the concept for the title? When you go through that process, you got your title, you got your concept, do you instinctively know this is going in the novel pile, this is going in the short story pile, or do you flesh it out a bit and then realize, yeah, this is probably more of a short story?
I kind of can tell right away. And it really comes down to how long do I want to talk about this topic? For example, I have a book idea where it's going to be a slice of life novel about a kaiju. And I love kaiju. I think that giant monster movies are the coolest. And I want to write forever about that topic. So I know I could write a novel about it, as opposed to Dragon Jail, where I had some ideas about it. I think dragons are pretty cool. But I definitely don't want to create an entire world about Dragon Jail, just a small story. So I can usually tell right away.
And can you, in terms of things you're working on, can you tell us any things that might be coming our way soon or might be up on the website soon?
Right now I'm working on a slasher story taking place in the 19th century. It takes place in the antebellum South. And this slasher villain targets the firstborn daughters of slave owners. The whole thing is, I think, going to be a pretty gory mess, and I'm pretty excited to show it off.
And what inspired that? Was that like a kind of Jack Ripper thing or like?
It was actually this one kind of, it evolved. I've been sitting on this project for a long time. The original concept was actually, once again, I just had the title. The title was called Ring the Bells. And the image that popped in my head was a Southern bell hung, someone hanging a Southern bell. And the rest of it was, how do I write a story about these Southern bells being hung and who's hanging them? And I had the devilish concept of maybe a slasher villain. I mean, it's common that slasher villains go after chicks. And why don't we just take it back to the 19th century? And we have these teenage girls who are Southern belles being stalked by this really creepy guy in a mask.
And of course, going back to the 19th century, like also circumvents the problem that plagues many horror writers and horror filmmakers, mobile phones.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I don't have to worry about that.
Do you think about things like that as well? Of like, oh man, if I set this in modern day, you know, because obviously there's a bunch of slashers that came out in the 80s that wouldn't really work now because of the technology we have.
Yeah, I always try to figure out a way to explain away cell phones. I mean, I know a lot of people just do the whole, oh, they're in the middle of the woods and there's no service. I mean, I don't know if you've read some of the stories, but literally it'll just be that they entered a pocket dimension where cell phones don't exist. And I try to get rid of them as fast as possible. I think a lot of authors do.
I definitely think a lot of authors try and do that. At least, yes, I suppose in the kind of surrealistic, kind of weird universe, it seems quite natural that, you know, it, in many of those stories that, yeah, just if they don't exist, they don't exist, and the readers will accept that. I mean, in terms of like them having no signal, because I live in Scotland, if you go in certain places in Scotland, that is quite authentic. If you go up to the Highlands, yeah, you're lucky. You're lucky if you're getting a signal.
Well, that's kind of terrifying. I mean, the next horror I write could be taking place in the Highlands then.
Yeah, no, there's a bunch of places in Scotland that are quite remote and therefore pretty free of reliable phone signals. Well, is there anything else you're working on that you want to tell us about before we head on out?
No, I think we covered everything. I think that yeah, I'm excited to show people more work.
Excellent, excellent. Well, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show, Evan, and come on again whenever the novel's published or, you know, the next collections are.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
That was my guest, Evan, there, where I'd like to thank once again for coming on the show. And I'd like to thank you, listener, for tuning in to our latest edition of the pod. Hopefully, it provided you with a pleasant distraction in whatever day of lockdown we currently now find ourselves in. Also, if you enjoyed this episode, remember the best way you can support the show is to rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. Finally, be sure to join us again in 2 weeks' time, when we will have another great guest from the world of indie horror. Until then, though, see ya!